Welcome to the monthly meeting of the Humanist Union of Madison. Our speaker today is Susan Hagstrom. Susan?
Okay, the subject is young humanists and what they're up to. I'm going to deal with people ages 16 to, I think the oldest is 30. So first and foremost, I got such a kick out of enjoying the research on this topic that I started to be at loss how to organize the information, so I may go back and forth on different subjects. So let's first start with the organizing structures that young humanists can get. The largest organizers, and they're mostly nationally, though they do have some international groups, are the Student Secular Alliance, currently located, I believe, in Columbus, Ohio. They have, as of April 2013, 407 affiliates. Half the board members are graduates within the last 3 years, so they try to keep the board members really in knowing what the college and high school students want. Many of the groups have Facebook pages. I printed out an example of one of the fun Facebook pages they have, so I'll pass it around so you guys can look at it. This is a tweet on one of their Facebook pages. And groups are encouraged to staff tables at the high school and college fairs. They run charity fundraisers, hold regular meetings, and other communal activities like t-shirts and logos. So this is my next picture I printed out, a selection of some of my favorite logos. Oh no, you can have it, I'm printing it up for people. Just an assortment of some of the favorite logos that they did here. There are 8 affiliates located in Wisconsin. If you're curious, 2 in Madison, the UW and the Law School, 1 in Appleton, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Oshkosh, Ripon, and Whitewater. The UW-Madison, Appleton, La Crosse, and Whitewater seem to be currently active at the moment, based on their Facebook pages. So, locally, what are the UW-Madison students doing? Now, past pictures of one of my favorites. In last October, they built a God graveyard on Bascom Hill. A God's graveyard of all the gods who are past and gone. Pluto, Poseidon, Zoran, etc., etc. Seems like a really nice idea. They decorated it for a couple of days. They didn't get too much flack on it, mostly interesting. They also organized a stone and atheist charity fundraiser. Not actual stones, just water balloons. All money raised was donated to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society to help fund blood cancer research and treatment. During December, they had a quite gorgeous flying spaghetti monster display at the Capitol and continued with regular meetings, board game nights, and they just finished their 3rd Free Thought Festival. They did garner some flack initially when they started winning grants from student fees. First grant was $69,000. However, not so much from Catholic organizations. And the quote from Badger Catholic was, "We absolutely respect the free will God granted us for individuals and groups to have an ideology that doesn't match our own." The initial flack was an editorial more to the point that student fees grants were inappropriate for both groups, religious and non-religious. In 2010, the UW-Madison Humanists also got an interesting reaction by drawing stick figures on campus sidewalks and labeling them Mohammed. Unknown people went around and stuck Ali after the Mohammed so that it wasn't offensive to the religion. Okay, so between the Student Secular Alliance, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the Council for Secular Humanists, and the American Humanist Association, many students now have more than one source to go to if they need help with whatever they need help with. But still, there are more than a few cases that I shall describe that have a hard go of it. Gage Pulliam was 16 years old in Oklahoma and contacted FFRF to get the Ten Commandments removed from the classrooms. which they eventually were. However, to up his activism, when other students started getting fingered for the complaint, he stood up and stated what he'd done, thereby netting not only him, but his younger sister a great deal of bullying. They told his girlfriend, for example, that she better not sit next to him because they might want to beat him up. That was in 2013. Another girl, Kaylee Wilson, got so much abuse, just for wanting to start a secular group in her high school, that she has decided to back down for now. She did get the school to a degree to hold it, but the abuse was so bad, she just backed down. And we all remember Jessica Alquist, who, simply for requesting a religious banner be removed from her Rhode Island high school, received enough bullying and condemnation that she eventually switched schools. Not good. But back to the positives. One of my favorites, Sophia, participated as the interviewer in a web documentary by Scott Burdock. It's a good 37-minute expose of the Good News Club. And rather fun. She actually went to a Good News Club fair that they had and interviewed the people there. As an amusing after-production anecdote, both she and the documentary received a cease and desist order from the Liberty Council with an implied threat of a lawsuit.
What's the Liberty Council?
That's one of the head lawsuiting lawyer group for the religious right.
Oh, so it is the Liberty Council?
Yeah, that's a seriously big organization. That's not like having your next door neighbor give you a lawsuit. That's impressive, shall we put it that way? Nothing came of it so far because the documentarian did make a film documentation that they signed the paperwork based pretty much. But still, it demonstrates an exceeding willingness to lawsuit any blackening of the conservative religious agenda.
Well, does the ACLU, did they submit an amicus curiae brief or anything?
They didn't have to go that far. So far, they didn't have to go that far. It's a fairly recent documentary, so they basically not much more than the cease and desist, and then the person holding the fair has stated more than once that he didn't actually sign the papers, but they have evidence to the contrary. So he doesn't really have much of a leg to stand on, unless he wants to go some sort of, I don't know. And then
Bearful sweetness, maybe?
Who knows? And then the admirable Scott Zaplin, age 21, is still going strong. In January, an article of his in Slate exposed the not admirable teachings of the responsive education charter school systems in Texas, Arkansas, and Indiana. Examples of the teachings he found, quote, students will learn in their history classes that some residents of the Philippines were pagans in various levels of civilization. They'll read in a history textbook that feminism forced women to turn to the government as a, quote, surrogate husband, unquote, unquote. Lovely education they're getting. In the past year, he has also petitioned the Louisiana court to open records regarding the state of education. That was his first activism was to petition the state government to get rid of a teaching creationism law in the schools of Louisiana. And he presented the Obama administration with a petition to increase science funding, arguing, quote, science is underfunded and denied by far too many. We are calling for $1 trillion of new funding for scientific research and development over the next decade. We are also calling for a permanent end to legislation that would promote the denial of science and a broader acceptance of evidence-based science, unquote. All in all, very active for a 21-year-old. Note, he's also semi-regular on Bill Maher, if you know who he is. Mm-hmm. And then to go international, a 22-year-old Fazil Al-Mutar, an Iraqi refugee and a humanist and atheist, is also working on Facebook and the internet. A lot of humanists are doing that. And he has created a global secular humanist movement Facebook page and a secular post website. The Facebook page has gotten over 2,000 hits. His goal is to have a global discussion page for all humanists across the world. How much success he's going to have, we'll wait and see. He pretty much landed in the United States in 2013, so he's just starting right now. And then one of my favorites, 30-year-old atheist Cara Santa Maria, has been making use of the internet, and sometimes on TV, to be a science journalist and to some degree a humanist journalist. Online programs she has been on include The Point and her own podcast, Talk Nerdy, where she interviews a variety of science writers, scientists, and even comedians. She has gotten to be a co-host on a show, Techno, on Al Jazeera America, and does special interest shows on the online news program, Young Turks. Last year, she co-hosted a show, Hacking the Planet, on the Weather Channel. In the last year, she has been also a speaker at the Science and Technology Awareness Network Conference, lovely title that, the CFI Summit, and the American Atheist National Convention. So I'm going to finish with Harrod Divest and the Humanist Community Project. The first humanist chaplain ever was at Harvard. And it is interesting to note that he is also championing a new group at Harvard called Harvard Divest. They are spearheaded by a group called Students for a Just and Stable Future. And they are currently, the last thing I've heard them doing is barricading the provost office, I think the provost office is the right term, to demand that fossil fuels be completely erased from the Harvard campus, including any investments or anything like that. And they're still just sitting there barricading as far as I know right now. Their goal is basically fighting against climate disruption and political inaction and for a livable planet and a just society for our generation and generations to come is their tag. And then the Humanist Community Project is a Cambridge-based initiative to help create, establish, and connect a stronger nationwide network of humanist communities focused on individual, group, and societal betterment for the benefit of the secular and free thought movement. All in all, the young humanists / atheists have been keeping up the work as needed. Okay, any questions?
That last person you talked about, the humanist chaplain at Harvard, would be Greg Epstein.
Yes.
The author of Good Without God.
Yes.
And he's been mentioned in previous programs we had here. We had Sarah Olberg at one point put on a program for us where she talked about the New Humanism conference that she attended and was enthusiastic about, that Greg Epstein was the primary organizer of at Harvard a number of years ago.
Yes, according to the Facebook pages, he has been having a regular community growing up there, and they steadily do charity fundraisers, basic dinners for the poor people type stuff, and all sorts of societal benefit type projects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have a new building, the Humanist Hub building,
yes,
on the campus there.
I was wondering what response of the student body is to the atheist-oriented versus the God-oriented positions and demonstrations and stuff. Do they get equal response, or is it different?
Oh, you're talking about Harvard Divest?
I'm talking about groups that demonstrate and teach about the world as we see it from an atheist point of view versus the God-oriented people. I mean, both of them are on campuses, I'm sure.
General speaking, well, I couldn't tell you about the God ones because I didn't research that. Pretty much, They have general acceptance, sort of an amusing acceptance whenever they do one of their hugging atheists. The descriptions they have is if they do have anybody who comes up, like when they do a hugging atheist or a fundraiser or a that sort of thing, if they do have somebody come up and, you know, just basically call them bad names, then it'll sort of benefit them because several other people will come up and sort of sympathize and partake because the bad person was creating a scene, sort of thing.
So we don't really know what the general student body response is to one versus the other.
You can basically find out when there is a bad human response, pretty much because it's blasted all over the place. I mean, Jessica Alquist, it got so bad that when Freedom From Religion Foundation wanted to send her flowers, they had to go to another town because none of the florists in town would send her flowers. And, you know, that's pretty innocuous, just sending them.
Girl,
a bunch of flowers for graduation, you know. And then she had to also leave her school and go to another school because, you know, people were harassing her so much. So, I mean, what you get is the individual cases where the students pretty much seriously get attacked. And that usually happens more when they start requesting something, sort of stepping, not quite out of bounds, but stepping forward and saying, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. Most of the organizations that help with lawsuits or strongly worded letters will let the students be anonymous. Mm-hmm. And there are several lawsuits out there by the Christian right who are basically wanting to stop their anonymity, sort of excusing themselves.
They want to be allowed to be unkind.
Yeah, and, you know. I suppose because they want to end up like this poor girl, Kaylee Wilson, who, you know, basically got so bullied and ostracized that, you know, she dropped the request for a humanist group.
I'm sure it depends a lot on the general social attitude surrounding the campus. Some campuses are very conservative communities and some are more liberal communities, mm-hmm. like Madison.
So
when the AHA group had a friendly competition raising money for a charity with the Christian groups on campus, the contributions to the AHA group was far greater than the Christian groups were able to collect.
That's good news.
Well, it's also humorous. I mean, stoning atheists with water balloons. And who could resist that?
We have freedom of religion in this country. We don't seem to have freedom from religion as a right.
I mean, some cases are pretty good. I mean, there was a few examples down in Texas. I simply had to read about the groups in Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas has such a bad reputation in my brain. I just wanted to see. But they had some relatively good successes in Texas that didn't have too much trouble forming groups. That was in colleges, though. High school students in Texas have a little bit more difficult. Even the principals and school boards, et cetera, are so nervous that they're going to cause a conflict. Mm-hmm. That they have to, the usual time I think was between 6 to 12 months when you're a student in high school. 6 to 12 months is practically a whole year of school.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, get to go from the request approval to the other status. So that's a long time for a student to wait to be allowed to organize a group in high school. I think the two cases I read were 5 months and then another one for 9 months in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That was a high school with one groups. So they do have a harder time in high schools there,
mm-hmm.
but in colleges they seem to be grudgingly accepted and not too much flack.
I think as Bob said, some part of it is like the community, because in general it seems like smaller schools it's a little bit tougher because in smaller schools, number one, everybody knows who you are, so if you're going to blackball, kind of everybody in the school knows it's a small group.
Makes a game.
But it kind of depends on the community, because like the school Millian went to, which was kissing 2,000 students, so it's a pretty, really small college. But the community it was in, the UU church in the community didn't have a church, and they met on campus, one of the big, campus meeting rooms they used for their Sunday morning services. So there was at least, and this is a pretty small conservative town, small town in Iowa, but at least within there, I think it would have been easier for students to organize just because there seemed to have been some overriding freedom in having a mm-hmm. humanist
view. Right, very visible.
Mm-hmm. Visible there every Sunday, but
mm-hmm.
I think it just, sometimes it just kind of depends. I would guess that if it's a community that has a humanist or a UU group of any size, it might be easier for the students.
Well, they're, I mean, the Student Secular Alliance is also trying other things. One of their goals is for students who are, you know, really having it bad is to have a teacher or a bunch of teachers create what they're calling a secular safe zone where the student can hang out in school if they're having particularly a lot of trouble. And another goal, a couple of organizations spearheaded by the Student Alliance is doing, is having what they call a rapid response team member so that if something really scoots out of hand, they can actually, you know, pounce on the topic and not have the kids suffer any more than absolutely necessary. So,
the new thing we have to learn tolerance for.
Mm-hmm. They actually are having a bunch of success. They started only in like 2000 organizing, and they're up to 407, which, you know, divided by the 50 states is a good number per state. Yeah. It's not actually that number. I mean, we have 8, for example. Mm-hmm. Well,
Rosemary had her hand up.
I was wondering, and this maybe seem a very simplistic question, and I'm sure that adult humanist groups have asked this many times. Did any of these very strong character kids, who I'm sure had a lot of chutzpah to do what they did at all, say on record to any adult that was trying to suppress them, what are you afraid of? You know, I mean, we get a reaction of anger, we get a reaction of indignation, and of course, all the stuff that you've got on here, you know, it's a contradiction to the Bible, blah, blah, blah. But
well, I mean, these are things that the student goes through themselves.
But I mean, let's assume they get all this stuff thrown at them. But I would like to see what a poised 16 or 17 year old who has enough guts to bring a lawsuit. I would like to hear one of them saying in a calm tone of voice, what are you so afraid of? And get an answer that isn't screaming and yelling, and I'm wondering if that's happened. You know, an answer that is an answer, not a Governor Walker answer, but a real answer to the question, not a God doesn't improve, well, that, you know, not a quote from the Bible, but what are you as an adult in the town or a parent in the town? What are you afraid of? We're a very small number. All we want to do is be left in peace to meet, you know, like the Constitution says we can. What do you think, what are we going to do that you're so afraid of? That you think, that we, what can we accomplish that you see as so harmful?
Well, I hate to say it, but I'd have to do a good deal more research. I was basically looking on who's being activists and
sure, but do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like a very obvious and simple question, and I'm sure that many adults have asked it of many of the religious right many times, but it doesn't really get a direct answer. The response it gets is your belief isn't the same as mine and mine's right, and we don't want to hear anything. But you know, anytime, it's like Hitler in Germany, anytime you see suppression, you think, what's behind it? And what's usually behind it is fear. And what's usually behind it is fear that somehow, A, the one who's questioning is dangerous because he or she might bring other people into questioning authority, or somehow break down society by introducing the possibility that there's another viewpoint. And you know, for the life of me, I'm trying to see why that's so dangerous.
Well, the closest two that I mentioned that I could come to are the ones who have actually branched out into TV and online TV and stuff like that. The Zach Coplin and Kara Santa. I keep forgetting her third name.
Maria.
Maria. And they both branched out to TV and stuff like that to sort of really advance the In their case, they also have the alternative goal of advancing science versus pseudoscience. That's both some of their big things. And some of the funniest YouTube things I've read are Zach Coughlin sitting there trying to get the Louisiana creationism lawsuit off the books. So he's sitting there, you know, he's sitting there with Nobel laureates, teachers from Louisiana, lawyers, etc. And the Congress people, the judges, etc., who are sitting, basically blustering their faces off. My favorite one is one where one of the guys pretty much asked that E. coli was E. coli going to turn into a human being? He's calm, cool, collected. He can really state his case, and pretty much the Congress people, the people who put this on the book, are just blustering their faces off. But that's my own impression.
So I think it's a serious issue.
No, I mean, no, not really.
The issue being, why can't I say what I want in a civil way because it's what I believe, as opposed to what you want me to say because it's your belief in a not necessarily civil way? Why?
Yeah.
Will the earth come to a crashing halt? And that might be, the answer might be yes from them. But then you have to keep pushing and saying, why? You know, tell me just what's going to happen. Here's a group of 12, 16-year-olds in your high school of 1600, and how dangerous. They are not carrying weapons. They are not going to your house and dropping leaflets. They are not sneaking your daughters away at night. So what possible harm can their ideas do? And I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, well, I mean, to some respect, they do have cause to be afraid, like the Texas people, in some respect, because there have been cases where, it's not quite a lynch mob, but pretty much close to there, where the kid is damn close to ostracized.
Well, that's a different kind of thing. That's danger because of your ideas. But you know what? Those kids are ostracized by other kids, and those kids have parents. And it's the kids' parents.
Not just the kids. Remember that case where the florist wouldn't send anything to graduation presents?
Their parents, too.
Yeah.
They're scared of ideas, again. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what these ideas could actually accomplish, that's the reality factor. What?
Yeah, well, you don't really see that much of a response, as I'm saying. I mean, with Zach Coughlin, it's blustering more than actually stating yes or no or anything like that. Or, in that case of the E. coli example, showing off that they really don't understand science. And with Kara Santa Maria, her websites, she gets pretty much everybody, you know, in the pseudoscience area, and she gets everybody in sort of the humanist area to talk on her websites. And her goal is just more to make real science, show how interesting real science is, than to denigrate anybody. So she doesn't really get attacked that much.
Do the conversations that she promotes on the website, are they productive in terms of relaying? You know, I mean, does anything positive come out of these confrontations or conversations from two different points?
Well, she's still going, apparently.
The kids were writing her thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. I mean, that's her goal. I mean, she had a regular job, and then she went into this online stuff pretty quickly.
So her goal really isn't to change the experts who are pseudo-experts who are speaking. It's to change the minds of the kids.
Yes.
Okay, that answers the fear thing. Because it's the adults that are afraid about their children. But again, you know, bottom line is, what, that their children are going to leave the church?
Maybe.
Oh, right. But I mean, that's so dreadful.
Oh, it would be to someone who did.
Children leave UUism, too.
Yeah, but they're not going to go to hell if they leave UUism.
How do you know?
I'm just... And those are also parents that have been controlling their kids pretty well.
control.
They wouldn't be afraid of
control.
Losing their control.
Yeah, control.
Well, that's going to
happen. Fear and control.
Right.
That's guaranteed.
Okay, well, thank you.
Do you want to say something more about the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which is one of the symbols here?
Yeah, that's one of the symbols.
Students all over the world seem to have taken the Flying Spaghetti Monster into, they may not take the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster seriously, but they certainly have taken the image to heart, so nearly every group has Flying Spaghetti Monster dinners at least once a semester.
And they call themselves Pastafarians.
Yep.
Is that because they're considering all of this conversation as kind of a mess of spaghetti?
Well, the Flying Spaghetti Monster has noodly arms that he reaches out and enfolds you with. They look like spaghetti.
Like an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
There's the fear of him. They're blamed.
But humor is good. You know, it's a good way to teach if you can. And it's more universal. And also getting people, including us, to be able to laugh at themselves or ourselves, it diffuses the building up of rage and fear, and you know, you may end up with exasperation, but it's a lot safer than rage and fear.
It's very popular. I mean, Dawkins has a similar theory. He says believing in God is like believing there's a teapot in the sky sort of behavior. So they do that sort of thing. Of course, Dawkins doesn't come off with that greater sense of humor. Flying Spaghetti Monster is better for the humor aspect.
I think humanists and atheists and such people are much more relaxed about things. Not so adamant and scared.
Well, there's not so much at stake.
Yeah. Well, it's much easier to be calm.
There's no such thing as eternal condemnation for an atheist.
On the other hand, let's see, who was the comedian? I think it was Seth MacFarlane said, was it Seth MacFarlane? Oh, I can't remember. A very witty comedian. No, it wasn't a comedian. It was a director. Yeah, a director mentioned that he was a humanist, but they had the hardest jobs because they kept believing in humanity, and they had to... They have with what they have to work with. It wasn't much harder than working with the notion of God.
I think when keeping in mind when students go into college, particularly students who have been under a fair amount of family influence relative to whatever their religious beliefs are, and then they get placed in a dorm room somewhere with somebody else in college, and it's a real time. So for some kids, it may be a time of aha, enlightenment. But for other kids, if their thinking has been very structured and not maybe their own choices, for them it can be very frightening and confusing that all that you believed in all your life, someone saying it isn't so. Mm-hmm. And just an example of kind of what happens freshman year, I remember when our daughter went to college and the first time I went to visit, my feeling of like, maybe this isn't going to work. And I walked in and the other side of the room was pastels and hearts and flowers and had these three great big posters on if you love God, they'll do this. And they had scripture readings, so these three huge posters behind the bed. The other side of the room was you know who's, and on the wall is Johnny Depp as a pirate, Beckham, the soccer player, with his pants barely on, and then Harry Potter. And I thought, oh, I don't think this is good. And then just sports paraphernalia thrown across them. But, you know, this is a huge, major philosophical crash. It's not just a rug in the middle of the room dividing the room in half. It's like, these two people, and they lasted about 8 weeks. it was too much. It was really too much for two kids to overcome the difference.
How many people here, when they went off to college, had eventually some animated discussions about philosophical, moral, ethical, religious principles?
Of course.
I have an eighth grade.
Well, you see, okay, now she just said something very interesting. Of course, that's what college is for. That is our viewpoint. It is not everybody's.
I had it in high school.
I had a class in high school.
I was thinking more of the kind of thing that Kathy was talking about, where you're juxtaposed with people that are very different from your own background.
I've experienced.
And just, it's, different ideas come up. Right. And then suddenly you think, I've always thought this, but this is someone I like a whole lot, and who seems to be very close to me on all sorts of things, and I never knew she thought this, which is totally opposed to what I've been taught all my life. Wow. And then you get into it.
Or better yet, I didn't know anybody thought that.
Well, if you come from a small town in the South, you probably never met anybody like that. But if you come from a small town in the South, you'll probably be sent to a Bible academy to go to college. But of course, we don't educate women, so maybe you won't. No, what you're talking about, Kathy, you know, it's an important forum. And most parents nowadays that have any flexibility religiously are aware that when their kids go off to school, you know, I'm spending all this money to teach you to disagree with everything I've taught you all your life, you know, what parents say. And it's not just a joke, it's true. Nothing's so smart ass as parents. Kids who come back after one year of college, there's a reason that they call second year students sophomores, you know, the wise fool. It's not an accident. You never know that much again. And by the time you're seniors, if you're lucky, you can see why your parents were both so upset and so exasperated. But, you know, intelligent parents realize their kids may change. And also may meet and marry people or partner with people who think differently. So it happens.
Wonder, Susan, if you got any feeling for whether these humanist groups encourage or discuss among themselves what is the best way to present your point of view. Because if you make your roommate feel like a fool, you haven't accomplished anything.
Oh, definitely. One of the goals
so
of...
So they have discussions about how mm-hmm. to listen to other people and say, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And this is so important. And if we get too arrogant about our humanism or our atheism, then we just turn people off.
Now, one of the goals of the Secular Student Alliance is to have the said group present at, I was calling them fairs or student fairs or student get-togethers. The $69,000 grant that UW-Madison got is the largest ever to one of these groups, but there are basic, I'm still blanking on what the proper word for them is, but sort of fairs where they, student groups and everything could just, you know, put out a table and say what they're at and that sort of thing. And the Student Secular Alliance does encourage all the groups to get out there, put up a display, that sort of thing. And then they also have this whole policy that they call Hug an Atheist.
Hug an Atheist?
Yeah. So sometimes for charity, sometimes just for PR sort of thing, where you get to hug an atheist, you know, and give them $1 and then they send it off to charity. It does work. One time, I think it was North Carolina, they had somebody start complaining about godless atheists and stuff like that, and they got twice as much money that day because everybody else was so sympathetic about the person complaining. So they are encouraging all these groups to be their own PR machines as well. Shall we say?
Well, that's good. That's going on with the sifting, you know. Willing mm-hmm. that the university talks about.
Realizing how much they may have in common, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, adults have trouble with this. What can we expect of teenagers?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you know, we could say what we like about the South, but they have had success setting up multiple groups in colleges in most of the southern states. So we may have this redneck South thing, but we also have the example with the Septuagint Secular Alliance that they have been having at least a decent amount of success in the last several years in presenting the notion and having kids want to do it. They don't come in. The kids have to announce that they want to do it and get help. Mm-hmm. They will come in if the kids say, "Eeks, I'm in this great trouble, I've had this problem," that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Then they'll come in.
Right.
And they might bring the Freedom From Religion Foundation if it's a question of a lawsuit, but until the kid sort of screams its head off or says something like that, the kids, the college students, the high school students, etc., have to do the first steps themselves.
Sure.
You know. Yeah, you know, and as I'm saying, in Texas, only it seems like only the high school students have had the huge amount of need help navigating school boards, principals, etc., etc., etc.
The first thing she wants is freedom to be him or herself without other pressures. But then when they decide how can we unite with others who feel the same way, how can we be a presence, and that's when they start a group, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I encourage you, I mean, if anybody, you know, you don't even have to be on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook yet. Admit it.
I'm not either. I don't want to be.
Oh, I'm just lazy. But they have the Facebook pages, open Facebook pages that you can see. So, I mean, there's this lovely demonstration of the Appleton. I didn't even know they had a Lawrence University in Appleton, but apparently they do. And the Appleton Lawrence University group going to see the American Museum of National History in D.C. They raised the money, and they went to D.C., and they had a fun time.
Can you tell me again what's the name of this Facebook page?
I got through most of them through the Student Secular Alliance. They list every single group that they have an affiliate with on their webpage. And if they have a Facebook page, they list the Facebook page too. And that way you can also see if they're somewhat active or not active.
Everyone has a chance to be mentioned there.
Yes. If you sign up as an official affiliate with the Student Secular Alliance.
That sounds like giving every equal time to have an important moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way for people to find acceptance with everybody.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if you know students, that's probably a good place to start. Otherwise, with the UW-Madison around here, they're fairly vocal, and they're still getting the student grants, so I'm sure Bob went to the Freethought Festival. I didn't make it this year, but they keep on doing that, and all sorts of other fun projects. Regular spaghetti nights. They've joined Freedom From Religion Foundation with the display at the Capitol, so now we're two. Woohoo!
I think they have weekly meetings, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Where they have speakers come in.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing Student Secular Alliance does. You can get grants to get speakers who wouldn't normally be in your neck of the woods.
Does somebody know about this school in East Madison that the kids stopped saying in the Pledge of Allegiance, they left out the part
under
about God?
God. Mm-hmm. Under God, I remember reading that recently.
And I was wondering,
would that have been at Shabazz, maybe?
Who was putting that, kind of getting the students to
it could
that.
Be the students themselves.
Was it recent?
Yes,
recently.
Yeah, it was on the paper just this week.
It could be the students themselves. There are a lot of more active students these days on this topic. It's actual parents who are running a lawsuit, but the most current lawsuit to get rid of Under God is in New Jersey.
Wasn't Under God added?
Yeah.
Yes. In the 50s. Under God was added in the 50s. I forget what the In God We Trust and the dollar was, I think, a little earlier than that, 40s maybe.
I think that's bigger.
But it's enough so that you can get dollar bills, bills without In God We Trust on it if you, I don't know how you do it.
How do you go about
Pay
big bucks.
Yeah, you probably have to pay more than the actual dollar bill or something.
Pay more than the face value, anyway.
Yeah, but you still can get them. You still can get them. FFRF at their convention auctions raffles off. Yeah. So, there still is evidence in both ways that the In God We Trust just showed up pretty much in the 50s when they'd wanted to, rah, rah, America. Sort of behavior.
This newspaper article said the kids, they started out with just leaving out the words under God, and then they stopped saying the pledge altogether. I think that's what.
Well, they did different things. Apparently, some of them said, "In peace we trust."
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
So what came up was the fact that it's a state regulation that the pledge must be said every day in every school, public school.
Uh-huh.
And that's where it got sticky, because if you're talking, I don't recall, was it Shabazz? Because if you're talking about Shabazz, Shabazz is now part of the public school system, which it did not used to be.
And that's still a law.
Oh, yeah, it was, as I said, it was in the paper the other day. That would be my guess. That it's not, you know, not so much that people have been looking at it, but that it's never been taken off the books from when it was first put on there. You could call LRB and find out.
So they don't necessarily do it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In almost every school, there's a parent that would have something to say about it if he or she found out they didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's a habit. You know, didn't you start the day off with a pledge in your public school?
In grade school.
Not in grade school,
I don't think.
In high school, we had homeroom. I'm trying to remember if we did that. But you're right, grade school, every day, one nation indivisible.
We might have recited.
No under God.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And it's automatic, you know.
I worked in public school every morning. When I wrote, they just crank it out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, right. It's so meaningful when you do that.
No, people are in the hallway getting, you know, putting their books in their locker, but it happens the same time every day, and sometimes you hear it, sometimes you don't, but they just crank it out.
Is that a grade school?
No, Cherokee Middle School.
Middle school.
So they don't actually have to say it just cranks out the loudspeaker.
No. Well. Some person cranks out a loudspeaker, yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, not that's interesting. That's
no, they say you can stand up or sit or something like that. Because I don't think about it because I'm in the hallway helping kids with their locker stuff, so I just hear it.
Are they supposed to stand still and be quiet?
Yes, but nobody does. Well, that's not true. If you're sitting in your seat, but people are in the hallway walking and what's going on with people. So they're asked to stop or asked to be quiet, but anybody in the hallway, I don't see anybody do it.
It's pretty meaningless.
What do you think the reaction would be if they do the students get to read, speak over the loudspeakers?
Well, it's got to be read every day, and sometimes they'll have a student read it or a group of students, and if nobody signs up on that particular day, then the librarian will do it or assistant principal. It's got to be done, and if there's a hole in the schedule.
What do you think the reaction would be if a student decided to volunteer to do it but left out under God?
Or in peace we trust.
I'm not sure they would care, because oftentimes it's bilingual. They have the Spanish version and the English version. So it's, you know, it's part of the milieu. And if someone decides to do that, I don't think anybody would know.
Somebody might.
It would be interesting to see who would care. Yeah.
Did you say they played Jimi Hendrix version?
Oh, years ago. The music.
Oh my gosh.
They used to play a song. I mean, they'd have some tape version of it. And one day the music director put Jimi Hendrix's version on. I was ecstatic, but nobody else seemed to know. Did you hear that? No, not really, they said. It's okay.
Probably
it was cool.
Tune it out, you know. They probably didn't know who Jimi Hendrix was.
No, maybe not, but it was Jimi Hendrix.
Have you ever watched the group of us saying the Bond of Union? If you go, I remember giving a program once and asking people to say it slowly and think about it. And they started out slowly, and after about 10 words, it speeded up. And I was watching the faces, and it was very clear that all these people that I know and love, and who certainly care about these principles, were still saying it, just saying it off, the way people say the pledge. Because they were used to doing it, and people do that pro forma. It's, you know, they have other things that are new and different, and so with something that's familiar, they just rattle it off.
One thing I wonder about is, after students graduate from college, where do they find support for non-theistic or humanistic views? We have groups like this, but we haven't done very well at attracting young members. How can we do a better job of that?
Do you think it falls off the cliff, sort of? Yeah, that's an interesting point. Is anybody rescuing them in terms of their ethical beliefs and their constitutional so forth? Or is that a time when they really don't want to be, when they kind of want to not think about that for a while?
Well, you don't have to be explicit about your humanism. or non-humanist religious beliefs to be ethical.
I mean, you live it, of course, but...
I think what happens is that this is a period of time that everything is so busy. And then you say about that young woman that was a visitor today who said, you know, somewhat she got to a point of where she wanted. She was in breathing space and she could start thinking about, this is something I really want to, tomorrow morning I think I'm going to go to church. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, there's that, at least the first few years post-college when it's just...
You're just busy.
Everything's...
You're sleeping, yeah, that's what you're doing.
And you're trying to find a job.
You're looking for a job to pay off your student loans.
You know, I think that's a really important point, finding a job.
Oh.
And then how you, I often think how students, once they graduate, how they can incorporate what they're doing into a very conventional job. Oftentimes their ethics are challenged from the get-go, but it's a job that's paying money, which you need for rent and food, so it's just interesting to see.
I think, you may too,
up and just
when they
like
start
the
a family, that's another big time when you start examining.
That responsibility.
Yeah.
They found a place they're living, they said this is going to be my community, and then they decided how to be more part of it.
But I mean, when the kids start asking the big,
yeah,
the big questions,
yes.
How do I answer this?
You want to raise your children.
On the other hand, I mean, I'm sort of reminded of the sorority ritual part in the memorial service yesterday. The way they're trying to organize these groups is almost more like a, you know, actual group than the same sort of
ritual
behaviors and rituals that go on during like these fraternities and sororities, charity fundraising, meetings on a regular basis, whether it's once a week, twice a week, or every other week, or once a month, and you know, get-togethers. Almost all of them have had at least 2 to 3 movie nights in the last semester that are active this semester.
Form a community.
Mm-hmm. So they sort of do form a community, and if they work it right, you know, it could be one that, you know, last your whole life, depending on where you go.
The ones who stay on in Madison, why, they could be part of the group.
We've got at least 3 people in the current young UW Madison group who have enough chutzpah and got seriously good enough science degrees that they could possibly go all over the world, sort of place. So getting them to organize further in Madison might be a question, you know. I'm thinking like Chris Calvi, for example.
Uh-huh.
That guy is smart enough, he could probably write his own ticket anywhere. If he did it well. And he was also one of the driving forces on getting the student grants, so I think he can basically argue his own ticket if he wanted to. So he could buy, I mean, so that's the question. I mean, there's several people in the UW-Madison group that could just wander all over the world, so trying to get them also organized past the college days is another question altogether.
I think everyone is going to be different. So.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, I mean, the group up in Appleton, they did almost a Girl Scout thing of raising money for a trip to the American Museum of Natural History sort of thing. So that's sort of another sort of getting together and really being a cohesive group that possibly can last beyond college days.
Well, we have a granddaughter who was raised as Russian Orthodox, and is before she got out of high school, she knew that wasn't for her. She was very distressed at the implication that she was going to go to hell and so on. And when we visit, she now has 2 children, and she's divorced and struggling to get her engineering degree, and now she's struggling to do her work. And when we go to visit, we'll occasionally take her to the Unitarian Church in Portland, one of them, and she says, this is great, I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
And she values her weekend with the kids.
Settled into her real routine.
But she has friends that are sort of a loose association, so I think it'd be great if the kids did have a religious education experience. But
now, that's one of the problems they're having with polls these days. They have a sort of non-religious category to fit all social groups, but
that doesn't mean you're not.
That doesn't mean that you're an atheist or even an agnostic. That means you're non-religious. So and they really have to switch these polls around so they separate the non-religious from the atheists if they want to see how well the atheists are growing. However, I think Freedom from Religion has had its like fifth straight increase in membership year. So that's still growing.
But if they had good experience in college in a secular group, then they're going to be positively disposed to seek something out whenever the time comes when they feel that's what they want.
It sounds like people in general would like to have some sort of community.
Well, I mean, that's basic social nature, if you ask me. But
that's a moving force behind the Sunday Assembly movement.
I think that's
a lot of young people are involved in that, and they want to have a community without religion.
I think it makes sense.
Speaking of which, the AHA convention does have a Sunday Assembly, so if you find out anybody's going there,
oh, it does.
Maybe we can get a report too. Well, they have the two people.
You mean that's the Sanderson and Pippa are coming to that?
Yes.
Interesting.
I might be able to wrangle my way, but I haven't figured it out yet.
Any other questions in conclusion for Susan about young humanists?
I appreciate you stimulating this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well,
especially now that we seem to have an increase. Younger people, pre-families, pre-marriage, and marriage and families. We have quite an assortment of young people who be nice to. I think it would be nice to invite them to a group and have a group to just talk to them about what their experiences were before college, into college, and out of college, and what see what some of their thinking is right now. Might be an adult. Sort of an adult education, you know, meet with them 3 or 4 times and just let them know that we know they're in a time of transition and just try to see what they're seeking, because we might not be meeting what they're seeking, and we could.
I'm interested to find out if there's that much going on in the college level. I think it's good.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say it beforehand, but if we did have a future program, if we could get one of those guys up here just to talk about how it is to be in a college program, that would be interesting, I would think.
Does First Church have a youth college ministry now? They did.
What was Channing Murray with that one? Is that not going on?
Channing Murray existing?
Changed his name. Yeah, it changed its name. It's the... funded by the First Unitarian Society, and it's called the Muyakum, the Ministry for Unitarian Universalist Youth or something.
Scott Finster was doing that after he went.
He used to be a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I would say sort of saying, I don't see it so much up here, but I mean, we have the case of, I presented 2 cases here, one from Texas, and one from Louisiana, of 2 activists who've gotten more into the humanist field, more from fighting pseudoscience and creationism and stuff like that than from the religious standpoint. So particularly down south, I think in the younger generation particularly, I see a growing, I mean, these are 2 examples, but I do see a growing almost outrage on their part from the pseudoscience crap that's being loaded on them.
Should. Maybe partly because the textbooks were coming out of Texas. Maybe partly because the textbooks were coming out of Texas.
Yeah. Well, the other one's from Louisiana, too, so that's because of the creationism law in his case. But down south, I do see almost a growing outrage in the younger generation on the stuff that's coming out there. So that could be another way for humanists to gain attention from the younger generation.
There's an organization called the Texas Freedom Network that is in a huge battle with the Board of Education in Texas. You know, and that's something the whole country needs to be aware of, because it's Texas that leads the way on what's in the textbooks. So, you know, I'm a member of TFN, the Texas Freedom Network, and they need all the donations they can get, because this is an ongoing battle to never...
Well, one of the reasons that Kaplan is so irritated with these charter school systems is most of them are teaching creationism, not evolution.
Yeah.
And they're collecting public school money to teach creationism. Mm-hmm. And
terrible.
In his opinion, that
where's
is
the
that.
Outrage?
Well, he's
people
doing
don't
it.
Know. I don't think people
right.
realize.
So how do people get mm-hmm. to know?
Well, they ought to read.
A lot of talk.
I mean, we're sitting here talking to the converted, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's why these guys are going online for the most part, because they can't get the attention. I mean, well, Zach Coplin, I mean, he's gotten Bill Moyers, Bill Maher, and a whole bunch of other people to put on his show. So he's sort of a, you know, that case versus most people. But most people can't get the attention. Now, Freedom from Religion has stated repeatedly that the majority of the charter schools in Wisconsin that have collected that public school money are teaching creationism. A lot of them in Wisconsin do teach evolution as well, but they are teaching creationism in those public charter schools that are collecting the money.
Well, I'm not online, as you know, but you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, how is one persuasive online? How does one make a point and draw people in when one is preaching to such a large, I mean, maybe the world? How do you reach people?
Well, essentially, you put some information out, and you make it attractive enough that somebody picks it up and then they send it to somebody else. If they send it, it's called going viral. It just means somebody reads it, they send it to all their friends, they read it, they send it to all their friends, they send it to their friends.
So it's widely dispersed.
Things can go from within.
It's important to have small cats.
Yeah.
A video with small cats doing something.
And if they have things like within 2 days,
riding on a pig.
hundreds of thousands of people can read something within 2 days.
Now, when people read that, and I know they can respond if they want, how do you said attractive, how do you make it persuasive, that is, so that people might change their viewpoints, not just be aware that knowledge is out there along with lots of others.
Well, it can have a person who is speaking, you can have a person who's bringing up some points, they use videos, they use music. I mean, this stuff flies around, particularly, I mean, young people, this stuff just goes so fast. And basically, if you look back, like in Egypt, the whole revolution, the whole, everything that happened in Egypt was done via cell phones and emailing back and forth. I mean, information can travel tremendously quickly.
Yeah, if you want an example of Act 10, I worked downtown, so I was pretty much wandering off to the protest the minute they started happening. But within a week, there were about 5 bloggers who started up blogging. And then within the next week, those 5 bloggers each had links to the other bloggers basically writing an article about some issue or another. And within a week, each of those bloggers had links to 5 other bloggers, the 5 other bloggers who were blogging. And they each put links to their webpage. So like right now, there's still Blogging Blue on there, and that has now up there to 50 links. Some of them don't work, some of them do. The internet is not very good at cleaning up after itself.
Of course, that's the way a lot of misinformation gets and a lot of really poisonous stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the one problem with the internet these days is that you almost have to sit there and, I mean, it's even worse than it used in the newspapers, because you have to sit there and really edit the information and actually try to find out what's actually true.
Fearlessly winnow and sift, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got to be careful what you collect and move or send on to other people.
Isn't it time consuming to go through stuff?
Oh yeah, you just do it every day. It's like it takes 10-15 minutes. Because you just get used to looking what you're interested in, and you don't look at the other stuff.
I think also you talk about what is persuasive and what's not. I think the media itself is persuasive. It's just it's on there. It's got color. It's got sound. And it could be poorly printed, it could be, but in fact it's on there. That I believe is a magnetic, electromagnetic attraction for all of us. So just the fact it's on that kind of forum can be persuasive, or not. But I'm thinking, you know, people worry about the cats and the music and the sound, but I think it's just the biological connection that we have to media.
I think
it can be persuasive.
No, I think that's right. But something you just said, Kathy, caught my mind. You said you get so you go through it quickly and you know right away what you want and what you discard. And I thought, well, if it's something you never wanted before and you go through that way, how do you this time not discard it and pay attention to it?
It's only repetitive over and over and over again.
Okay.
So there's stuff that I'm online looking for something, and there's something, some ads there every day, all the time. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I regret it 99% of the time, but see, I've done it, see? So they've got me. Mm-hmm. They've got me. So I think that's what happens, too. You just, everyone's on media so much, and you just get tight, you just push it, see?
So are we pushing our point enough in all the ways? And again, I'm ignorant of these, that's why I'm asking. Are we pushing as much as we could? And sharing this with younger people who are looking and seeking things.
Like Susan cites example after example, people keep doing it. They enjoy what they're doing, so they just keep putting it out there all the time. They're tireless.
Plus, I mean, with the media being the way it is these days, a lot of the information you have to find online. Mm-hmm. Freedom from Religion Foundation with the charter schools. A whole bunch of that charter school information. You do not get stuff like the creationism being taught in schools if you read the papers. Mm-hmm. If you do, there might be a paragraph farther down in the subject. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the Capital Times is only one newspaper and the rest of them really don't. And even the Capital Times doesn't say it that much. If you read the print newspapers, outrage over creationism being taught in the public schools and Christianity being taught in pretty much what's ending up being public schools with the charter school system is non-existent. Whereas if you go online, there's people screaming their heads off at having to pay for Christianity with their tax money.
Now, ask them how they feel about having Judaism taught or Methodism.
Or Islam.
That's a good one. Anything else? We take for granted that Christianity. We take for granted that Christianity is the other, and they take for granted that we are the enemy. But what about all those other religions? And how would we feel? How would any other people feel to know that they were being taught? You know, imagine you say you talk about being persuasive. Imagine you say, "Gosh, my daughter came home from school the other day and she started talking about what it was like to be a Baptist and being immersed in a pool on the altar and feeling so holy walking up to a river." You know, many parents would go, "Ah." You know, it just sounds like media are so powerful and they could be used more and better. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
A lot of people, they say that.
Well, everybody's using it, yeah.
Well, they are powerful in the sense that there's nobody answering against what they just said. You have to sort things out.
Mm-hmm. If we're afraid of somebody taking charge of this thing, in the long haul, I bet on the Buddhists.
Yep. You're right.
Well, thank you very much, Susan, for bringing us up to date on what the young humanists are up to.
And feel free to take some of the pictures and stuff.
I always love your presentation.